This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Hey, welcome. It's Disaster Recovery Hour. It's Sunday. It's a little after 11. I'm your host of the show, Chris Plunkett, every Sunday at 11 to 12. Like I said, Disaster Recovery Hour, and we talk about emergencies and disasters and how they affect your lives, and bring in experts in different fields and different disciplines, as I say. I want to say that was a good show last week with Felix Nader from Nader Associates about the workplace violence and incident prevention. I know you say to yourself, you know, how does that, what kind of disaster is that when, you know, the show's about property and insurance related stuff. And, you know, listen, there's the, like I said, disasters come in a lot of forms nowadays. And my eyes have been open to many things along those lines. So, you know, there's some comments, on the question page, on the website, the new website, which is drhradio.net. That's drhradio.net. Mike wrote in there, it seems to me you should start training observers in schools. These people with tendencies towards violence or having a screw loose, which I agree, Mike, all day long, will get identified early on and receive the help they need. I agree. And it comes on, there's an article from a buddy of mine who wrote an article about FEMA, and they're assisting one of the local schools in the Bergen County area, teaching the teachers about how to prepare for emergencies and also to be on the lookout for the kids. They do all schools, obviously, everyone knows they have school psychiatrists or psychologists, if you will. So that program is starting to get implemented slowly but surely. But Mike, if you are listening, that's going to be replied to you by Felix in an official form, on the email form. The other one was with Aaron, what type of measures are usually taken to prevent workplace violence? That right there will go into depth by Felix. Felix is aware of that. He's out doing a speaking and engagement this past week, so he'll give you guys the heads up on your questions. And Drew had one also with what type of violence are we talking about here at home, in-house terrorists. That's definitely a Felix question. But you know what? There we got plenty of nut jobs out there. Which we had one this past week here in Jersey, Paramus. We had Rachel Morgan get shot several times, trying to pull over a suspicious vehicle. Young kid got off a lot of rounds on her. Thank God she had her vest on, but she was hit in several other areas. And I believe at this time, I mean, I can't talk because I don't know the full intel on it or the information. But best wishes to her and her family, and also to her her coworkers over there at the PD of Paramus. Which I'll be having a show on in a couple of weeks from a buddy, a new buddy of mine from NJ Corrections Now. It's a law enforcement issue magazine, and they talk about the life and times really of being on the job and being just, you know, regular people also, you know, I mean, behind the badges, normal everyday average Joes and Janes. So with that said, we're still in the throes of winter, and there's been a lot of action happening out there regarding the weather. But you know what? With having Bartoli on the show, I was reading about these financial issues. You know, the Madoff thing, that's a disaster. And Bart's going to answer that question for me when he gets on the show about, has Madoff actually affected the small investor? And how do you, is there a form of disaster preparedness financially that Bart can stick us in the right direction? And also with taxes. I know there are a lot nowadays of the financial world, a lot of guys work from home, and a lot of home-based businesses now, you know, corporations cut back. So everyone's got the computer at home. And so Bart's got some ideas and some thoughts for us on how to hedge off a disaster with the IRS if, you know, if you have legal deductions. So I think he's going to kind of touch a bit on that And along with that school information, we're going to have Captain Dan coming back and also chime in from a buddy of mine from the FEMA about getting some of the schools and the teachers on board with disaster recovery mitigation plans, whatever they call it, with rolling blackouts, you know, or blackouts within, you know, because of the down power lines while you're in school. And there's, you know, little kids, teach the young ones. Don't put it past the little ones to have the capacity to learn and drop, roll, and take cover and things like that, like they did in the 50s underneath the desks and the kids with the local fire departments. They teach the kids how to drop and roll. Also, another, as I sign off every week regarding the war, there was a recent article in the paper about a past Vietnam vet who passed away. But when he got back from his tour back in the late 60s, he wasn't received too well, but he didn't have the chip on his shoulder. He went out and did some good, great community work. And that was a cool story because his son is doing a second tour, this soldier, Tom Egan. He's done a couple tours in Iraq, and he's a National Guard out of here, out of Jersey. So you know what? That was good. You know what? They don't get enough ink, not enough press. What's going on with that? You know, as Americans, we're proud to have these guys serving for us, and it's not forgotten because it's not on the front page anymore. If you just join us at the Disaster Recovery Hour, I'm your host Chris Blunkett. I'm doing my ramblings. The first segment of the show, I always kind of go solo, fly solo, unless there's something that's important, which, hell, everything's important with me. So any disaster is important to me. I like to report on it and see if I can be of assistance. We also had the NASDAQ, you know, in a couple weeks, not a couple weeks. I think next month I'm going to have an IT guy on for disaster preparedness in the IT world, about computer hacking, you know, simple things, even though getting credit cards in the mail. You know what? You should shred that stuff. People find that stuff in the mail all the time. They're able to do identity theft. You know, that's a big disaster. We're going to be touching on that. Like I said, the NASDAQ got bumped, but I guess they have their own hackers employed to go against the criminal hackers. So that's that was an interesting situation. You know, it also ties in with Bart. I mean, if he's setting a goal for you in the financial preparedness world, and you have stocks and equities and such in the NASDAQ, and here's some guy a million miles away in another country is hacking in and stealing your hard-earned money. One of the things that I haven't talked about with the kids and being prepared with your kids, you know, playing outside, you know, there's been lots of snow days this past, while we're in the middle of winter. Kids are out there playing, and it's should be fun. Kids should be innocent and all the rest of that, but as a parent, there should be some form of preparedness, you know, regarding the kids out and telling them to be aware of, you know, coming by with, you know, sleds or, you know, driving by. Oh, you look very nice in the snow. You're having all fun. You know what? And I'm bringing that up because there was an article I read, and on top of it, I have personal experience with something like that. It was a little disturbing with a local family member. So somebody rolled up on her, and it was a weird encounter. And she was prepared, but sometimes, you know, kids, they forget. So I think hitting home, you should always warn the kids and have a preparedness for them when it comes to strangers and things like that. I think it needs to get a little more out there in the public eye. We're going to be going to a break, and we have BP, and we have Tim from Wave Place, the Wave Place Foundation. He's going to be Skyping in from Haiti. So it's going to be a good show today. So stick around. The upcoming segments are going to be with, like I said, VP and Tim, who's in country down there in Haiti. I mean, we're moving away from a little bit of the Haiti thing, but we're staying in contact with it because we think it's relevant with other areas of the world and also in our own world. There's a lot of NGOs, you know, non-government organizations that are throughout the country, thousands of them actually. It could be one person, could be 100 people, could be 1,000 people. The Red Cross, there's another one, even though they're chartered by Congress to be on the ground when an incident or a disaster happens, whether it's man-made or a natural disaster. So that's also, you know, the Red Cross will be on the program. It's going to be I'm excited about that because I really had some questions for the for that representative. You know, a lot of people don't know about the Red Cross and what they really do. They're not about donuts and coffee. They do a lot more than that. So, like I said, let's go to a break. We'll be talking to BP and Tim. And also, don't forget, LP is still out there. We're going to be having him on the show sooner than later. He's got still has some unfinished business to take care of in Haiti. We want to know about his plans. Still very close and dear to my heart, and especially experiencing what he did down there in Haiti. So with that, let's go to the break, pay a couple bills, and be right back.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple.
Do you know that there are some emergency shelters that have no emergency backup generators? You can be prepared and have your own emergency generator for your home and business. Hi, I'm Dan O'Brien from Academy Electrical Contractors Incorporated, a full-service electrical contractor servicing the tri-state area since 1981. Our specialty is generators. We give you a complete turnkey installation, service your existing generator, rent you the temporary machine for that planned shutdown or that unexpected power failure. Academy Electrical Contractors can install a generator to protect your family and business from a power grid failure. Power your heating and air conditioning system, keep your refrigerator and freezer running, power your well pump, or power your sump pump. Visit us on the web at academyelectrical.com. That's academyelectrical.com. Or give me a call at 877-SPARKIES. That's 877-772-7597. Academy Electrical Contractors, generating satisfaction 24/7 since 1981.
And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Hey, we're back from a station break. You're listening to Disaster Recovery Hour. I have a surprise guest that came to the studio today, Paul Sebring from MMRC. I also have on a Skype phone, I have Tim Falconer from Waveplace Foundation. Remember, Tim deals with the schooling system and the computers, trying to set up systems and school systems down in Haiti after the earthquake, and he's done it all around the planet. Hey, Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good. And Mr. Sebring, how are you?
I'm doing really good as well.
It was a surprise meeting regarding the two men here and myself. Just they're both doing humanitarian work down in Haiti. Well, BP's now in the States and sets its sights on going more on a global standpoint, with still some traction down in Haiti. When LP is going to do some other things down there, don't quite know what's happening with that quite yet. And Tim, you're already in country. You just got down there this past Wednesday.
Yep.
Yeah. So I thought it'd be a good show, a good for the listeners who's been following us on that social media, Facebook and Twitter world. Of getting you two guys together, because you're both, in my opinion, you're talking about two important factors when a natural disaster happens, and that's dealing with the children and the future of their state and their state of mind, also along with the medical, and that's where BP comes in. So, with that said, Tim, what's the news since Paul's been out of country for I guess a month now? What's happening down there?
Well, I'm sure you've heard that, you know, the return of the dictator, Baby Duck, came back. Essentially, I sat on the plane next to a cameraman from CNN, and he was telling me that, you know, all the reporters came down for the one-year anniversary, and then they all left that Saturday, and then Baby Duck came on Sunday, and then they all came back. I mean, you know, just talking to people here, you know, it's this kind of a situation where people are rolling their eyes. They're not really that concerned about Baby Doc. People seem to be a lot more concerned about what will happen on February 7th with regards to, you know, the official date that Pravala is supposed to relinquish power. And as far as I know right now, nobody really knows what's going to happen.
Now, where are you staying presently?
I'm in Port-au-Prince. I'm at the Visa Lodge.
So, BP, you and Tim have spoken a couple times before. You chewed up the same kind of ground?
Yeah, we were in when we were in Haiti, we were down there in the downtown area as well.
So, Tim, regarding logistics on MMRC's side, is it similar to you, or do you actually need the assistance, even though they're medical, but their logistic ends of it, of actually having a fixer on the ground and transporting and getting some goods and services for you? Would you employ someone like that also?
Well, I mean, we tend to work with established partners and we go to their locations, you know, so it's not, I mean, yeah, there's definitely things to deal with every single day that you don't expect, but I would imagine that, you know, what they do is a little bit more unplanned.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that, BP?
I think that's a very good word usage. No, I mean, from what I know from Tim, from what we've looked at, you know, we've talked and everything like that, love the program that Tim's working on, everything like that. And, you know, for us, MMRC has always been more of a, you know, emergency response type situation and helping, like, you know, get things through and, you know, punching it through and getting it done.
Yeah, and we're working with groups. I mean, you know, like our newest partner that, sorry about that. There's probably a baby duck going overhead. Is a group called AMRT, and they're working in six tent camps here, and their focus, at least the focus with the people that I'm working with, is with the children, providing child-friendly places, and really looking after the, you know, the emotional and educational benefits of, you know, I mean I sat in on a meeting of the kindergarten section heads and was shocked to find out that they represented 1,500 kindergarten teachers in these five camps. You know, so I'm just overawed at that kind of logistical stuff that's going on here in Port-au-Prince.
And Tim, it's BP again. I mean, this is the thing, it's like I really applaud for what you're doing down there is that, you know, we're really great at going in and, you know, technically, you know, stopping the bleeding or putting out the fires. But, you know, it's an honor to, you know, get to know guys like you that are in for the long haul that can get a lot of work done. And, you know, they just getting everything established and working with the tent cities because, you know, I just want to tell you my hat goes off to you for that.
Thanks. I mean, I play a small part. I'm sure you've certainly seen it. There's no words to describe, you know, I mean, two things. One is, you know, as you go past, where people live, just taking in the scenes of family life, you know, and, the 1,000-yard stairs and the whole bit. And then, but at the same time, you know, you walk into a school and, you know, two dozen kids rush up and try to hold your hand and, you know, and you do, I do my little Charlie Chaplin bit or whatever and try to engage them all. And you know, the contrast between the just abundance of joy and determination that you see and then the conditions that, that it comes from, you know, in spite of it is profound. You know, it's wonderful being down here.
Tim, it's Chris. So I was just reading this past week, you have the number one diplomat, Secretary of State Clinton's down there, and in the paper it said something about $1.5 or $1.7 billion are just still sitting out there. I want to get your thoughts on that. This is, if you just joined us, as a disaster recovery, I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. We are now, it's 11 o'clock on Sunday mornings. In studio is BP from MMRC. Everybody knows BP. And on the Skype phone is Tim Falconer from the Wayplace Foundation. So, Tim, I remember the first time you're on with your computers were still stuck in transit or just laying low somewhere, which you didn't have any intel on that. What happened since then?
We got them through, you know, in typical Haiti fashion, right before the pilot started. So, that was, shouldn't say typical. That's actually good. Yeah, I mean, you know, as far as the, you know, billions that are sitting, I was talking to a very colorful character who's something of a celebrity, Richard Morris from the Hotel Oliveson the other night, and his cousin is Martelli, the contested presidential candidate, and I, you know, I basically brought up the same thing. I said, you know, isn't it awful that, you know, these huge NGOs are sitting on $1 billion+. And he turned to me and in all seriousness, he said, no, it's wonderful. And I'm, you know, looking at him, what are you talking about? He said, well, if they had done everything they said they were going to do, then the people will, you know, be motivated as they are right with themselves. And so he's kind of crediting it to the political situation. I mean, a lot of the popular unrest is because Preval and the NGOs haven't been doing nearly enough for the last year. And so, I mean, you know, where that goes, I mean, I think that $1 billion could do an awful lot of good down here. But anyway, so that's just one perspective.
No, I agree with you. This is BP. I agree to an extent. I mean, it's one of those things where, yeah, a year later, major rubble removal. I mean, would they say 5% of the rubble's been cleared up and that's it? And granted, you know, if the billion was released immediately and there was work right away and everything like that, then, you know, they might be a little more complacent with what's going on with the election side of it. But that's honestly one of the reasons, like, you know, after everything that happened to LP in the prison and all that stuff, that's one of the reasons why, you know, MMRC, you know, is taking a break from Haiti for quite some time, because of, you know, the fact that, you know, it's all that money's out there and so slow progress that, you know, we're a very small NGO and, you know, we're able to get a lot of stuff done, but we really need to wait for the larger NGOs to catch up with what's happening. And, you know, unfortunately, it's one of those situations where it's a catch 22 where we want to help out, but until they get those funds released and everyone else can get back to work, it's kind of one of those situations where we have a hard time with it, you know, justifying being down there and just waiting for stuff to happen.
Now, some of the areas that you were have similar similar contacts. Paul was just laughing about some of the guys you met in the hotel. Tell me that. What was that all about, BP?
Oh, Mark, I can't remember. The owner of the Oleson Ram, right? That's who you were talking about?
Yeah.
When you said colorful character, I immediately knew who you were talking about. No, I had a couple conversations with the guy. I mean, he's a great guy, and I've seen him perform with Ram when Arcade Fire was down there. And no, he's a great guy. He's very, for the listeners out there, I mean, he's about 6 feet tall, long grayish white hair, you know, glasses, white guy. He's married to a Haitian woman. And the nice thing is he owns the Olufsen Hotel. He's, you know, the lead singer and, well, he's founder of Ram, which is a, you know, huge, internationally recognized band. And you can just be sitting there, you know, and walk up to him when he's drinking his coffee and sit down and just, like, you know, like Tim said, you just start talking to him about anything. And
yeah,
very knowledgeable, very educated. And his cousin is the is Martelli, who is finally squaring off with the I can't remember her name for president.
Matt,
yes. And so, no, but just a great guy to talk to. Very, like you said, very colorful.
We're going to go to a break and be right back. We'll continue the conversation.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
We're back. I still have the same folks with me at BP, and I got Tim Falconer Skyping in from Haiti. So, Tim, when we went to the break, we talked about a few different things. but one of them is the logistically, when you're in country and BP and LP were in country, working in the urban area like Port-au-Prince, going out to the less urban and into the villages, if you will. Why don't you guys banter back and forth of how that played out?
Well, I mean, we in the spring, I spent most of my time on the island of Laganab, which is very rural. You know, it's the Haiti of decades ago there. And then in November, you know, I took a trip along the southern peninsula, and I met, you know, we did 20 souls in 12 days. And it's pretty clear the differences. You know, like I was saying during the break, that in this one trip I had three different schools in a row, and I was expecting just to meet with the head of school. But I showed up, and there was an auditorium full of people that sang as I walked in. And you know, the welcome was, I mean, it was amazing. It was a bit embarrassing. Port-au-Prince is a little bit more jaded. You know, it is really, you know, they call it Republic of Indios, and the Port-au-Prince is the Republic of Indios.
Hey, Tim, can you repeat what you just said? Yeah. We have a really bad connection on Skype.
Oh, okay.
Just to start off with the Port-au-Prince part.
Thanks. Okay. Well, in Port-au-Prince, it's a little bit different. I would say it's a little bit more jaded. It's the preponderance of NGOs. You know, they call Haiti the Republic of NGOs, and I would say that nearly all of that is in Port-au-Prince. And so there's some pretty serious inequities. I mean, I was just talking to somebody the other day about well-meaning NGOs coming down here and paying more, you know, like maybe double or triple the going rate for things, and how it's kind of upsetting the expectations in the economy down here. You'd think paying more would be a good thing for people, but what it ends up doing is it makes things unsustainable, because then everybody else wants the same thing, but there's not enough money for the same rates.
No, and we had the same thing with that when we were living in Port-au-Prince. It was the house we were staying at, literally one block up the road, I want to say AIF, Action Against Hunger, was up there. They were paying for this almost the same size house, but with virtually no parking on it. They were paying $15,000 a month U.S. for it. Right. The house we were in, we were paying four. And we were probably being charged twice as much as what it should have gone for. But we also understood the fact that, you know, it's the housing crisis and everything like that. And I mean, initially, I think they wanted somewhere between $8,000 and $9,000, I think, that we, you know, got them down to four. And so it's one of those things where, you know, I agree with you completely. Everyone thinks that Haiti is so cheap and everything. But one of the major problems is the NGOs that are down there that are driving up the price of everything. And you're dealing with, you know, it's creating more of a class separation. But like you were saying, you know, we did work in Lagunav in December. And when we got there, it was completely different. It's like, you know, in Port-au-Prince, I was always on edge trying, you know, you've got to watch your back nonstop. It's a lot more jaded, a lot more territorial, things of that nature. But when we went to Lagunav, or we went up north to fight cholera, it was quite the opposite. It was, you know, just never had to worry about anything. People were just so much more, they embraced what was going on a lot more, and they were just so happy to, you know, to have the help. And it was a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, it really is city versus country. And you know, pretty much the same way, you know, like New York versus Pennsylvania, you know, like where I live or something like that. It's
So, Tim, do you think it's because of the presence of the international NGOs, or?
Well, yeah, I would say it's a very big factor, because they're especially after the earthquake. I mean, they don't have any experience down here, and you know, and they're paying what they think is cheap, but it, you know, it's a lot more. You have to factor in scarcity too. You know, especially after the earthquake happened, land is at a premium, and safe land is, you know, an even greater premium. You know, you go up the hill a bit into Pétionville, and you know, that's, I guess you would call it the equivalent of like the Bay Area here. You know, that's the safe place to live.
And the other thing too, that, sorry to cut you off, one of the things that I'm also thinking is that, you know, we talked about the billions of dollars earlier, and like guys like ourselves or Grassroots United or LAF, or it's Lend a Hand and Foot, and I know you as well, we're a lot smaller level. And, you know, given the fact that there's billions of dollars out there, they're, you know, the huge NGOs, one of the biggest problems I have with them is the wasteful spending. How, like you said, you know, 15 grand a month for them, it's like, oh, you know, that's not that bad. We'll just, you know, shoot that out there. And we have a better place literally one block away. We're playing of 25% of that. At the end of the day, you know, it's the little guys like us that, you know, are really going to be helping out a lot more. And not more, I take that back. We'll be helping out quite a bit as well. And to have some of those funds released to aid the smaller NGOs and what they're doing, because like you, you know, you're a lot more involved in the community. It's, you know, you're very goal specific, things like that, as were we and all these other micro NGOs. And I know for us, an extra 50 grand a year would have made a huge difference.
Right. You know, and the other thing too, just to add to that, is that, if the goal is to help Haitians and to turn over the reins of this kind of work to people that are in country, it makes it even more difficult because, they're in even worse situation than the micro NGOs in terms of being able to afford these things. And so if you drive up the price, then what happens is Port-au-Prince just becomes completely dependent. I mean, it probably already is on, the big ticket NGOs. And, it's a tough situation.
Tim, so it's almost like the egg and the chicken, which came first. So this is Disaster Recovery Hour. It's the in between 11 and 12 now on Sundays. My guest today is BP. Everybody knows BP, and everybody knows Tim Falconer from Wave Place Foundation. BP, why don't we talk about I remember the first time you guys got on the show, you talked about that beat-up old pickup truck, and then one of the sponsors was able to get you some a couple of vehicles. Tim, are you the same way when you first got down there, or did you have set up vehicles at the get-go?
Oh, it's different every time. I mean, the first time we went down there, we had, our partners driving us around. We did have to pay drivers when we were going along the Southern Peninsula. The last time I was down, I rented a car and drove myself, which was really quite a trip. And then this time we're taking the plan ourselves approach. You know, we're here, our pilots are all in one location. So we're staying here and we're just taking, taxis or tap taps back and forth.
So. Yeah, we did all of our own driving down there starting in about April. Little Paul for months was the primary driver, and we ended up getting a truck we were renting for about $700 a month, which was an old 89 Toyota pickup, and everyone thought that $700 a month was terribly expensive, but. You know, right now you go down to Avis or anywhere like that, you're going to pay $150 a day for a vehicle. And, I know, it's ridiculous.
If you can get it.
Yeah, if you can even get it and if it doesn't break down on you. The $700 a month was a blessing. It was from another group down there that was helping us out. But then, the lease was up and we got a donation in from Patricia Arquette. And we bought our very own 1984 Toyota, blue pickup truck that we lovingly named the Ghetto Sled, and it's one of those things that once you're driving down there, it's really hard to come back to the States and drive because it's just such a different way of doing it.
I basically will never complain about traffic in the States again. It's one of the strongest culture shock things when you get back is how polite everybody is, So, though I haven't driven in New York since I got back, so I got to compare it to New York driving.
Tim, I saw a video that BP had. It was obviously a live video when they took a UN bird up. What mountain village was that?
We went up to Bourne on that one.
So I saw that, and that was his one of those especially when the cholera broke out, the main mode of transportation. Thinking about transportation, you're also thinking about power. I know you were talking about with Dan O'Brien regarding you need power to fire up computers and to do the educating of the children. How'd you make out with that?
Pretty good. I mean, that's one of the things we're going to be doing while we're down here. We're going to try to meet with welders and electricians, local ones. We met up with this group that has been coming down here to try to come up with a low cost power solution just for DC, just for laptops. Get rid of the inverter. And so far, what I'm hearing is we could do solar for $100 a laptop, and that's until the marine batteries wear out, which is pretty doable, for a lot of these schools that we're in. And compared to generator cost and all the rest of that, it could be a good thing. The trick here is not allowing AC. And because what happens, and we've seen this before, where you get some kind of solar solution or something in, and then the principal gets air conditioning in his office. And it's It's not, and then the laptops don't get used. So yeah, we're definitely looking into doing what we can do. In Port-au-Prince, it's less of a problem because there's so many, you know, a lot of people are on the grid.
No, okay. But Tim, we're gonna go to a break, and we'll pick it up. And I know you're busy. BP's got other stuff to do, and I appreciate you guys getting on. But we'll come back from the break, do some sign-offs, and be back in a second.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need answers. CPP is the answer. CPP is a full-service emergency services and restoration company. With 20 years' experience in emergency management and restoration, our seasoned team of skilled professionals is ready to assess damages and restore your property to its pre-loss condition. Who do I call first? What about insurance? Is it safe to stay here? What do I do next? Fire, smoke, water, or mold? CPP restores your property and your peace of mind. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration. We've got answers. For more information, go online to www.cppems.com or call 201-483-8953, 201-483-8953. In New York, 212-920-9789, 212-920-9789. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, serving the New York metro and tri-state area. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Hey, we're back from a station break. Like I always say, we got to pay some bills. Tim's still on the phone with us, and got BP in the studio. So, Tim, BP and LP, we're talking about the Reykjavik children. BP, what are your thoughts on that? Because I know Tim's been working with them.
From what I'm understanding, and Tim, correct me if I'm wrong, with the Reykjavik children, what it is basically indentured servitude, where a family will buy somebody else's kids, and they basically put them to work and everything like that, whatever manner is needed. Personally, it disgusts me that anyone could do that to each other.
There's another word I would use, which is a little bit stronger than indentured servitude, which is slavery.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I would agree with you on that one. It's like the upper class Haitians or the middle class Haitians enslaving their own people. And, it absolutely disgusts me when I see it. And, it's one of those things that, you know, I get a little too emotional about it and go straight to a instant rage, because I don't see how you can treat another human like that. But I have worked with groups, and I understand you're doing it as well, where you're working with the Reykjavik children and the generation that's currently, you know, enslaved, and educating them and stuff. And I think that's phenomenal with what you're doing, because you have the ability to free them of what they're currently trapped by.
Right. I mean, we're working with four partners down here. One of them is Reykjavik Freedom. And we're in a school in City Soleil where they have an after-school program with Reykjavik children, and that's what we're connected with. They have to be after school because the children have to work all day. You know, many Reykjavik children don't have shoes. They only get fed if there's any food left over from the family. You know, they don't go to school. Reykjavik Freedom convinces the Reykjavik families that it is in their own best interest to educate these children so that they'll become better workers. And so they kind of do sleight of hand just to try to get these kids the safe environments. And they have child advocates who, you know, develop relationships. And, you know, I mean, in a place where bad is very bad, this is really, really, really bad.
Yeah, it's one of the worst things out there. And one thing that I've noticed is one of the groups I worked with, instead of trying to free the Reykjavik children from the families that they're with, they've actually opted to educate them and take care of them. Because what's going to happen, and from what I mean, I was a little confused by that at first, but it makes perfect sense, is if they free the Reykjavik children, all these families are going to do is buy new kids and buy new slaves. So don't.
Well, and also, what are the kids going to do? That's the other
exactly,
thing, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a situation where, I mean, they were given up, not usually sold, usually given up by very poor families to richer families on the promise that their child would have a better life, and which, you know, doesn't necessarily come true.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the conditions are, you know, it's absolutely awful. And then, you know, the other big thing that we are doing is working in the tent camps this time. And, you know, it's, as you know, as well as anyone, you know, this situation of, I guess we're down to like, we're actually under 1 million displaced people now, but, you know, in a place like Port-au-Prince, I mean, I don't know, it was 1.5 million, the population of Philadelphia, homeless, you know, and it's just a, I don't know. I guess I feel that anything that we can do to provide hope, anything we can do to provide a sense of future, enthusiasm, you know, before these children, before their light essentially goes out, before the 1,000-yard stairs take hold, then, you know, it's work well worth it.
Tim, I know we got the banner up on the website. Well, I know you're obviously you're down and you're in country, you're working. I don't want to take any more of your time. I already have today. It was kind of a spur of the moment. I'm glad you got on the phone with us. BP is heading out of town also to do some other stuff. I think he's coming back to the New York area in about a week and change, right, BP?
Yeah, I'll be back here next week, Tuesday.
Tim, when are you heading back? I mean, I know you just got down there.
The 11th. I'll be back.
So I'd like to, you know, check in with you when you get back. And I again appreciate you coming on and obviously talking with BP. I thought that was great luck to have produced it this way. So take a look. Be safe.
Yeah,
you too.
Tim, this is BP. Really, I mean, my hat really goes off to you. You know, MMRC is not going to be in Haiti anytime soon after everything that happened. We're letting everything cool off and reassessing it. We're actually headed out to South America right now, probably the end of the month. But, you know, I'm really honored that I had a chance to finally talk to you and, you know, everything like that. And, you know, you're doing great work and keep it up.
Okay, thank you. Nice talking with you as well.
Thanks, Tim. So thanks to the guys, BP, Paul Sebring, and Tim Falconer from Wave Place Foundation. I was talking with a buddy of mine this past week about the show and, you know, what I do for a living. And so we were talking about the show and how what he does for a living, how that could be tied into the show. He wanted to talk about, you know, advertising and stuff like that. And I said, well, it's really about 6 degrees of separation. I come into a house that's got that had a flood or had a tree through it. OK, right there. OK, now I have the insurance. There's one party. Now I need to remove the tree. I'm going to call a tree company. But first, I got to call a crane company. Crane company takes the tree off. Then the tree guys cut the tree down. Okay? The tree broke through the power lines. What happens? I have no power. So I bring in Dan O'Brien from Academy Electric. Boom. There's the power. With that, now I have reconstruction. So I have to bring in my carpenters. Now we're talking about mitigating any further damage and securing the building. So I'm talking about board ups and locks. And you see how I'm going with this? So it goes through the master bedroom. And blows out the master bedroom. I got to bring in Dave Fenyahazi because he's got to bring all the dry cleaning because it's got wet from the outside because of the storm and so on. It's, you know, so in the property disaster world, there's so many different parties involved with any particular loss, as we say, and that's whether I'm being hired by an insurance company or an adjuster, or if I'm being hired by a property management company or the city of New York, for that matter, like in NYCHA, you know, the housing authority, I should say. And these are all the guys that I deal with on a regular basis. So when he asked me, you know, how could I advertise or how does your show help me? You know, I mean, it's when you're advertising and you're spending your dollars on advertising, you know, how's it going to benefit you? So and this guy owns one of those coffee wagons. And I said to him, the funny thing you should ask that, because inside an emergency response book that Captain Dan O'Brien originated and implemented with some of the local fire departments in Bergen County, trying to get some traction with that, there's a person in there that we used or that Dan recommended to be on the scene for large fires or large catastrophes or disasters. You know, people, the fire departments, the volunteers. Everybody needs to eat, right? You know, let's use that the fire a couple of years ago in close to New Jersey. That was at 48 hours. The thing was still burning 48 hours later. So they had a couple of coffee wagons there. And so I said, there you go. Perfect example. I mean, grant you, it's not going to always happen. I mean, it's not going to happen frequently, I really should say, but maybe once a year, once every 18 months, there you go. I met a guy out on Staten Island that's got a tow company, tow truck company, and I had a vehicle impact through somebody's home. An older woman drove through her garage door and went through out the back of the building, at the back of her house, I should say. Again, this is the same type of thing. It doesn't happen often, you know, once a year, once maybe every 2 years. But to know that I have a guy that I can count on, so when he called me, he said, well, you know, use me for this. You know, this I'll take this all day long. And that's what I'm going to do. So how does the disaster property and all these different subjects I talk about and my different guests, future would be Red Cross. That's an easy one. But look at the workplace violence and incident preparedness with Felix Nader last week. You know what? There's insurance-related issues there. I mean, going to work, does your boss have coverages for, you know, something like that? And also, if you're at work and you work in a convenience store and somebody drives through the front window, you know, it could those things happen on a daily basis on this big region that we live in. We're going to knock off another segment. It is a little before 12 on Sunday. And this is our new time slot. Hopefully it was informative with the, you know, a revisit with the guys. And listen about our other disaster. Let's end the war, bring home our troops. God bless our country, and enjoy the rest of the weekend. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett from CPP Emergency Services and Restoration. You can reach Chris by calling 201-483-8953. In New York, 212-920-9789. And don't forget to tune in every Sunday morning at 11 for the Disaster Recovery Hour right here on AM 970, The Apple.